plagued U.S.-Iran negotiations 10 years ago are back again. But this time, Iran must negotiate with an administration that is under Israeli pressure to go to war if it doesn't get what it wants. The U.S.-Iran talks have now moved to the so-called expert level. That doesn't mean an agreement is within reach. Agreeing to technical talks suggests both sides are expressing pragmatic, realistic objectives for the negotiations and want to explore the details, says one expert who has long studied Iran's nuclear program. The devil is in the details. Sanctions on Iran are probably a key topic at these expert-level talks, as are measures to ensure that Iran's nuclear energy program is separate from any bomb-making facility. Exactly which sanctions on Iran might be removed, and what level of uranium enrichment would be acceptable to both sides, are central questions. In the best of worlds, a U.S.-Iran nuclear deal should stand a good chance of getting done, mainly because both sides have strong incentives based on troubles at home. Iran's economy is in a shambles, and its public is uneasy. Neither Russia nor China is in a position to bail it out. Removal of sanctions would be a major benefit to Iran, especially its oil exports. On the U.S. side, the Trump administration's global tariff hikes, particularly on China, are producing more backlash than a rush to Washington to renegotiate terms of trade. Trump's entire domestic program is in upheaval, and his hope to engineer a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine seems increasingly unfulfillable. And let's recall what Trump said about the nuclear deal President Obama worked out with Iran. He called it one of the most one-sided transactions the U.S. has ever entered into. One approach to a breakthrough agreement is a U.S. easing of sanctions on Iran as Iran produces evidence under international inspection that it has halted uranium enrichment. Elimination of the sanctions would depend on evidence that Iran is moving back to the very low level of enrichment, under 4%, that it agreed to in the 2015 deal with Obama. Beyond that narrow agreement, perhaps a way forward can be found, a confidence-building framework that would eliminate the Israeli threat of attack and stop Iran's support of Hezbollah in Lebanon and the Houthis in Yemen. But such a far-reaching deal seems beyond the plans of all the parties. "I think we're going to make a deal with Iran. Nobody else could do that," Trump predicted last week in an interview with Time magazine. He's wrong on the facts, but let's hope he's right in his prediction. I'm Mel Gertal for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, April 29, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, Lexis Ponce, Sam Bowman, Kenny B., and Onyx. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Isabel Charlet, Faraz Siddiqui, and Brian Bull. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined by Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief at Street Roots, to talk about this week's edition of the paper. It's the Spring Anthology Volume 2. Welcome to the show, Kay.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So last week we talked about volume one of the Spring Anthology, and here we are with round two. For those who don't know, what is the Spring Anthology?
Yeah, Spring Anthology is our annual opportunity to look back at Some of our most impactful and important pieces, some of them are because I really like them, but generally, you know, these are the pieces that we feel made a difference and showcase all of the hard work that goes into producing stories like Street Roots does.
Well, let's talk through some of the stories that are back out in print this week. First is one that you and I actually discussed on News in Depth before. Folks can go back and listen to the whole thing if they want to. It's about a story called Referring to Be Referred in regards to the flaws in the Oregon Department of Corrections health panel system. Can you recap that for us? I understand there's been an update as well.
Yeah, the story is, it's actually part two of a two-part series that I did looking at the increasing deaths in Portland or in Oregon's prisons, despite the fact that the prison population was going down. The Oregon Department of Corrections has reached or exceeded, come very close or exceeded its record in terms of annual deaths for the last several years. With there being more deaths and fewer people, that me was an indication that, you know, there was a problem. So I started looking at what could be causing that. And the big thing that, you know, I kept coming back to through interviews and public records requests was the state's healthcare system for its prisons, particularly, like you referenced, its healthcare panels, which essentially it's a group of medical professionals who receive requests to send folks to outside care. We're talking about things that require surgery. Maybe they need to see a cardiologist, you know, things that are really serious and can't be treated within the prisons through the facilities that they have there and their staffing. So what I found was that in many cases, you know, by looking at lawsuits and complaints and interviewing people, that in many cases, people were waiting months, if not years, to receive care that a doctor had already determined was medically necessary. That's kind of produced no shortage of lawsuits and complaints for me to reference in that reporting. I also found a few, I looked through all of ODOC's medical staff and looked at kind of their licensing histories to see if, you know, there'd been complaints or suspensions. And there were quite a few, especially, you know, in the folks that I focus on in the article. Yeah, the update is that the day after that article came out, which would have been a couple of days after you and I talked about it, the state placed its top doctor and medical administrator on leave and launched an investigation into pretty much all the things that I cover in the article, though it's worth noting that ODOC to this point has not been willing to comment on whether or not the article had an impact on their decision to place those folks on leave and launch an investigation, but it was like 24 hours after the story came out, so seems pretty close there for there to not be some relationship, but then in February, the state concluded the investigation and fired the two people that it put on leave. And, the findings of the investigation were very consistent with what I found in my investigation. It sounds like the state is, at this time, at least exploring options to improve its medical care for prisoners.
That is really, really cool to be able to see your work have that kind of impact. Also in this edition is a story from February in conversation with Portland Mayor Keith Wilson about his homelessness plan. What are the key takeaways from this story?
Yeah, I think articles like this really stand out to me because I think it's always really interesting to see, you know, what a politician is saying when they first start the job or are running for the job, and, you know, what they say after a couple months on the job. I think this piece is, it's excellent because I think Jeremiah's expertise really shines in the interview itself and the details that Jeremiah touched on, and I think the detail that he was able to elicit from Mayor Wilson. I'm really interested. I think, you know, something I have continued kind of looking back at is, you know, how he discusses sweeps and kind of, you know, seems to see them as being something that takes up a lot of resources and doesn't necessarily have, you know, the desired result. And I think we often see with Portland mayors, apparently, you know, the opinions about sweeps seem to change pretty quickly once they're in office. It is, to me, still the most thorough breakdown of not only, I think, the plan, because the plans will change, right? It's the intent, it's the thought process behind them that I think Jeremiah was able to explore in a way that I've not been able to read elsewhere.
Street Roots is also reprinting a story from Kanani Cortez called Expanded North Portland Library Boasts Artwork from Local Black Artists. Tell me about this one.
Yeah, I think this is one of the really, to me, important community features that Street Roots does. You know, we are, I think, you know, mostly known for our investigative and accountability work, but we do really try to make sure that we're allocating some time and resources to highlighting positive efforts within the community and highlighting, you know, folks who are sharing their gifts with the rest of us. This story is really interesting to me, I think, for a number of reasons, but I always really like to read about artists' inspiration. And I think that's in their process. And I think that's especially true with something like this, where, you know, the artists that have their work featured in the library live in the community, and it's something that, you know, matters to them on a personal level that I think, you know, really kind of enhances the story itself and really kind of underscores the importance of the art and what it means to the artists and the community. It's also, Kanani took really nice pictures that we had to run in black and white originally, and this gave me the opportunity to run these photos in color, which was also exciting for me.
Talk to me about Jeremiah's other story in this issue, dealing with Zenith and some of the characters in that whole tale.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really excellent public record story. First and foremost, you know, Jeremiah was able to obtain previously unreleased communications between the city staffer, who is very influential, if not, you know, more or less in charge of the permitting process that Zenith Energy has to go through to be able to continue its fossil fuel operations on the banks of the Willamette. And, you know, Jeremiah found a pretty, you know, seemingly close friendship between that city staffer and a lobbyist who is actively working, you know, a Portland Metro Chamber lobbyist who is working in the interest of Zenith, trying to get the city to kind of let Zenith continue doing its thing. I mean, it's an excellent story, I think, that really helps readers understand that, you know, for all the things that we see in city council meetings, there's still a lot of stuff that happens that none of us would be aware of without the reporting that people like Jeremiah are doing. And, you know, this is a case where this resulted in city council passing a resolution demanding an investigation into Zenith's lobbying, as well as potential violations of its current agreement with the city. And, you know, in the city council resolution demanding that investigation, there was reporting from only one outlet, and that was Jeremiah's reporting in Street Roots. So, I mean, this is something that, you know, I think this investigation is important. I think, you know, Portlanders, generally speaking, are not big fans of fossil fuels. So, you know, this is the type of thing that if we are to live in a democracy and, you know, the will of the people is supposed to be what our politicians are doing, you know, I think shining a light on processes like this are really important for that. And this is a case where that that, you know, for all we know, no one would have ever found out about this relationship. City Council would have never demanded this further investigation. Yeah, it's just an example of some really important reporting producing a very clear impact.
If our listeners are interested in reading the Street Roots Spring Anthology Volume 2, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way is to go find a vendor. They are most places where there are a lot of people shopping or walking around. We also have a list on our website of common vendor locations, though vendors are independent contractors, so they may not be in that place at normal working hours. So please don't send me an angry email if you go to one of them and can't find a vendor. But yeah, the best way is always to support vendors. I mean, these stories are also available to read on our website for free, but it has a beautiful color cover illustration done by Edo O'Donnell King, our editorial illustrator and designer. There's also a nice color back page ad talking about our spring fund drive, which is launching right now. So yeah, it's a great issue to make sure you get a print copy of. I won't spoil the cover illustration, but it is, I think, a beautiful illustration of a real Portland institution.
Thanks for coming on, Kay. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That was Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief at Street Roots, speaking with me about this week's edition of the paper, the Spring Anthology Volume 2. More information is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Local Indigenous activist Tracy Molina, who also goes by Koska, recently spoke with KBOO reporter Sam Bowman about her experiences of personal and public protests in Portland. From 2018 to the present, Molina has participated in events including confrontations with right-wing extremists, the months of protests following the murder of George Floyd in 2020 and 2021, and demonstrations for the rights of Palestinians. Over this time, she's experienced and seen a wide range of treatment at the hands of Portland police, county prosecutors, and local and national media, which she says include targeted harassment of activists, evidence that has been falsified or ignored, misrepresentation and doxing by public figures, and pervasive mistreatment of detainees in the county jail. The part of the interview we're airing tonight focuses on her agitation for increased safety and access to medical care and basic needs at the Multnomah County Detention Center, which has led to an ongoing misdemeanor case against her. The full version of this interview can be found on the KBOO website at kboo.fm/eveningnews.
I knew that people were going to die in the jail because, one, I was a corrections officer for a year. I got trained as a corrections officer, worked in a high security prison. I never saw any kind of abuse that what the jail was doing. And then I saw a lot of dangerous behavior by the jail. And I also knew that it was very dangerous because I worked in an inpatient psych unit before and have a master's degree in social work. And so I could tell what they were doing was going to result in death for sure. And no one would listen to me. I was just a crazy person. So I set the alarm off and I told the cops that responded why I was setting it off, because people were going to die. Then five people died. 60 days, four or five people died in 60 days after I did that.
And you're referring to the kind of spate of deaths in like 2023, 2024.
Yeah, right. Because every time I went to jail, I would see them doing dangerous behavior that could result, that was lethally dangerous. I knew that what they were doing would cause a death. Eventually, it would cause a death. I knew for sure.
Could you tell me a little bit more about the alarm incident? What led up to that?
So I'm just desperate for anyone to please God listen to what I'm saying, you know, about what's going on in the jail. I mean, it's just such an easy, well, to me, it seems it would be like an easy fix to save people's lives. if you walk into the garage at the jail, it will set an alarm off. And so I just walked in there enough to set the alarm off.
This is at MCDC?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I even recorded it. Because I'm saying on there, when he comes down to get me out of there, I'm saying, like, you got to do something about all the abuse that's going on there. Why don't you care about what's happening to people in there? Yeah. And I know, like, the house, if that place was on fire and we were trying to save people on the inside, like, we would be allowed to break down the door or set the alarm off to let them know, hey, people are in there. And they're, you know, they potentially could die. So I knew that's an actual legal argument. So for him to charge me for a felony for it is ridiculous, especially when so many people died afterwards, you know. And I will say, I don't know the new sheriff's name, but I could tell as soon as she came on board, I saw immediate safety in the jail improve. I saw immediate cleanliness in the jail improve, and I saw less abuse. Like, I never got attacked in the jail after she was put on all the attacks, because I would get attacked in there because the guards would believe the propaganda about me that I'm just some wild anarchist rioter that needs to get put in their place. And so a lot of jail guard Trump supporters, you know, believed it was their place to put me to beat the crap out of me.
Is guards doing this?
Guards, yeah, guards. Okay. There were guards arrested too. It's not like, that's another thing. It's like, yeah, you could say I'm crazy and I'm saying all this because I'm crazy, but you could also go look up that guards have been arrested and found guilty for their crimes in that jail for hurting people, for purposely assaulting people. They just didn't investigate any protesters cases. They only investigated like people that were snitches for the feds who got beat up by the jail guards that feds off. That's how the whole investigation started with the DOJ, who went in there to enforce Mike Schmidt or whoever. I think Mike Schmidt was still the DA to charge the corrections officers with assault, and then the other ones with neglect. And one of the deaths, they were convicted.
Can you just clarify quick, is the case around the alarm, is that still open?
Yes. Yes. What I'm going to be going on trial for and explaining to a jury that I was just trying to get justice for crimes committed against me, and I was just trying to save someone's life in the jail.
Was something happening at that moment?
No, just me playing it over and over in my head. I could hear them scream a lot sometimes, depending on what unit I was in, because fentanyl withdrawal is like a monster. It's not like, or at least it isn't, it sounds, even just sound, the way it sounds, different than just the normal heroin suffering withdrawal. It sounds a lot worse. And so I would, you know, like some, I've done pretty well dealing with it now, because I know I have to talk about it no matter what. But at that time, I sometimes would hear, you know, like could hear that noise.
Regarding the jail danger, you're kind of referring to the overall effects of both of, like,
yeah, they were putting people mentally ill, they knew they were mentally ill, in isolation cells with extra things they could use to unalive themselves. Cool. You know, like, usually they're supposed to take your shoelaces, stuff like that. If they don't take your shoelaces, you know, for some people it makes it a lot easier for them to do what they're going to do. They're doing stuff like that on purpose, which I found shocking. I don't know if it was out of ignorance and neglect or if it was on purpose, but it was an extremely dangerous thing to be doing.
You have the couple of cases open right now. Do you have, what sort of support do you have from the community around those?
Just recently I started getting really good support. But I still had to put lawyers on my credit card, because Multnomah County, to stick it to me even further, denied me a public defender because I had gotten a $5,000 check from the city for what they did to me in 2018, that attack they did to me. So, but that money disgusted me, so I didn't touch it. It just stayed in my account. And because I didn't pay the bills, I had bills worth more than that, but had some, I was dragging my feet on getting rid of that money. And they held that against me and denied me a court appointed attorney, even though I'm on a fixed income as a disabled veteran, and that's all I have. So it's that part's been the hardest.
Curious about it. Were they citing that as like an asset or something?
Yeah. And wow. Then I think later, because there are some times like I've been so upset and just don't care anymore that I will just not follow the court rules and just say what, you know, like I got dragged out of court. When I found out they were charging me for the kidnapping is wrong chalk, I flipped out in court and had to be dragged out. And then they just put down in the records that I didn't show up to court. Like if you don't follow all the court's rules, they just write you down as you didn't show up and you get a warrant for your arrest.
Is there anything you would like to add about your experience in Portland that you'd like to say?
Yeah, I'm just one example, and my example isn't even as bad as it is. It's not as bad as it gets. And I just really wish that people who say they care about human rights cared about human rights in their own jail. They'll march around Portland for human rights 5,000 miles away, but they don't even know what's going on in their jail. And it's not just wrong, it's unlawful. I just wish people would pay attention, because anyone in Multnomah County has the right to go ask for a tour through the jail so they can see for themselves. And a lot of times, believe it or not, that actually helps, because you know they have to be on their best behavior and they have to clean this and clean that. And so it actually is helpful if people do that, if people exercise that right and say, I heard, you know, we've had a lot of deaths in the jail in 2023. I'd like to see, you know, what you're doing to change, you know, blah, 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 just whatever as a concerned citizen, because it's some of it is so easy to correct, and all it needs is a few powerful voices to stick up for what's going on in jail and what goes on against protesters, the targeting of protesters. I mean, doesn't anyone wonder? And maybe, you know, maybe a lot of Portland, they like this, but they pretty much killed the anarchist spirit in Portland. And guess how they did it? It wasn't through legal means. It was through a lot of abuse and a lot of torture and a lot of mistreatment, a lot of false charges.
I know you mentioned that under the new sheriff, you've seen the jail get a little bit better. But I mean, taking into account, you know, that Nate Vasquez is now the DA, and there's a lot more calls for increased arrests and police officers and chargeable misdemeanors and felonies around possession. Do you see it continuing to get better, or?
No, it just gets worse. It gets much worse, because the worst place you can put somebody severely mentally ill going through withdrawal is jail. I mean, I've seen so many people in there that really, like, obviously needed to be in a hospital. And that, you know, having this idea, we're just going to put them in jail and teach them what they need to learn or whatever. It's, we don't have the same rights as a dog in the dog pound in there. Like, it would be safer to go lock them in the dog pound, because they're going to get water there. There's people who die in our jails from no water. I mean, really, you're such an annoying nuisance on our streets that we're just going to stick you in a box and then not give you water until you're out of our life anymore. Like, it would be more humane to put suicide booths everywhere. It would be more humane to do that than to what they are doing to people in the jail is unbelievable. And there's no medical. Like, I used to get medical when I would get arrested and I would go to jail. I would get medical. Now I don't get that. I don't get any meds or anything, even though they have them all on my list, because they're the VA and the jail have their computers interlinked or whatever, because there's so many veterans that end up in jail from their mental problems. But yeah, no medication, no, which is dangerous for people with heart disease and high blood pressure. I mean, that's why people are young people are dying in the jail too, is because their medical symptoms are just being ignored.
And you mentioned a bit about the people's ability to take tours of the jail. What are some things that people can do to improve what's happening, if anything?
Taking the tour is like something pretty simple that you could do. And like the higher your social status is, the better it's going to be for you to take tours through there. And I don't know what else. I mean, there needs to be some kind of jail support. Like, since I've gone in and out of the jail so many times, I've seen so many things that are so dangerous. Like, I've seen them dump a guy in a wheelchair out into freezing cold, an elderly disabled guy. I've seen like really cognitively impaired young people come out of jail that could get a predator could get really easy, you know. There needs to be some, there's so many people that want to really, when they get out of jail, they really do want to do good. They really want to stay sober. Like, they finally made it through withdrawal. They want to make a better turn. But then they get out of jail and all that's there are drug dealers. There's no one there saying, hey, you want to go to a clean and sober house? Do you want to try this? Do you want to try that? There's nothing like that. It's all straight back into the fentanyl field. There's no help to get you from point A to point B. And if your brain isn't as good as everyone else's, you know, that step from getting out of jail to the clean and sober house or to a treatment program is a very difficult one to make.
Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Yeah, thank you.
That was KBOO reporter Sam Bowman speaking with Portland activist Tracy Molina. A full version of this interview is about three times as long and can be found on the KBOO website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.